Abner Meyers is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, a dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Meyers, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is today. On the Hook, we'll cover topics like the state of boxing today, Abner's journey from a kid on the streets to being a boxing champ, sports, music, culture, and family life, and so much more. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Meyers wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English are out on Tuesdays, and episodes in Spanish out on Wednesdays. Welcome to Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the show. And thank you to our partners Indeed and Bet Online for sponsoring Bulls HQ. On the show this week, I'm pleased to say we have a first-time guest appearing on the show, making his Bulls HQ debut, is a guy who has been a welcome addition to the Bulls beat over the last 12 or so months, putting together some great work over at NBC Sports Chicago, something I'm sure that will continue into the offseason as we head toward the draft and free agency. And all of that is the very reason why I have Rob Schaefer joining me now on Bulls HQ, because over the last week or so, he's been putting out some interesting stories that pertain to our Chicago Bulls, and I thought it would be fun to dive more deeply into them as we look ahead into the offseason. So, Rob, welcome on, mate. Thanks for joining us. How's things?
I'm good, Mark. It's good to be here. You're someone I've followed for a while. Respect your takes, respect the snark, and all that type of stuff. So it's good to chat.
Well, I'm hoping there's not going to be too much snark going forward. I'm hoping there's only going to be positive comments from me about the Bulls going forward, but I appreciate it nonetheless. But I will admit, Rob, I'm disappointed in my own self that you made an appearance on the Chicago Bulls Eye podcast before you did Bulls HQ. I'm disappointed in myself that I allowed that to happen, so forgive me for that.
Yeah, I was wondering how long it would take Fred to come up in the flow of this conversation. I had planned to ask you. I had planned to ask you how he was doing before we wrapped up, because you kind of are Bulls Twitter's main vein to him. I'm ashamed to admit, and if Fred's listening to this, he might get a chuckle out of this. I have gone and checked on his Instagram a couple times, maybe once or twice throughout the month, just to see if what's being discussed over there. And I've been a little disappointed. The takes are not as scalding over there. But how's he doing?
Oh, look, I don't have Instagram, and I certainly wasn't going to create an account just to go follow Fred, that's for sure. But I have no idea what he's doing over there. I've been texting him back and forth every now and then. More so when the finals were on, I suppose, but I haven't heard from him from the last week or so, but I'm assuming he's doing fine and he will be back on Twitter within the next week. Though he has been fired from this show because he just didn't fulfill a few bets that we had for this specific season, and I had to fire him for this podcast, unfortunately, and that's his due punishment for being just someone who is not a trustworthy man. But apart from that, I'm sure he's doing well, taking his month off from Twitter, but I'm sure he'll be back on the podcast soon enough. But enough of Fred. Like you said, I didn't expect to get into him or mention him at all, but he's always on my mind in some way. But I wanted to talk with you about some topics that you've been covering, I suppose, or been writing up on NBC Sports Chicago over the last week. And look, there's not much going on at the moment with the NBA, the Bulls, those sorts of things. But I think what you have sort of covered off in the last week in terms of your articles are pertinent to some of the conversations I wanted to have today. And I thought they were pretty interesting to discuss, particularly the first one that I wanted to get into was this long piece that you did about, let's call it ambitious, trades that you sort of sourced from Bulls fans that were mock trades, fictitious trades that Bulls fans sort of sent through to you, and then ultimately you would grade and put through a grading of those specific trades. So like I mentioned, it was a long read, but it was a very good and fun read, for particularly for this time of year. We're obviously approaching the off season now. So I guess my first question in terms of you creating that piece, coming up with that idea, is why the hell you would even do it, given that I'm sure you got just absolutely inundated by fans with, I know you put 16 in the article, but I'm sure you received probably 50 odd trade proposals, and some were probably a little bit more crazy than others. But yeah, I guess my first question is, why would you open yourself up to that?
Well, yeah, I just think it's fun. It's fun to see where fans' heads are at. Like you said, I mean, with the run up to the draft and with the long off season and how a lot of people have been talking about, you know, executives might get jumpy this time of year making moves. There was a report today, and I can't remember off the top of my head, so I can't source it, unfortunately. So apologies for that. But there was a report out today that an executive believes there's going to be maybe more player movement this offseason as opposed to, like, big money going out. If there had to be one or the other, there's going to be more player movement just because of all the COVID-19 implications. Teams are going to be a little bit more hamstrung, and there's just a lot of different, you know, player situations out there that are interesting for trading. So it was just an avenue to see where Bulls fans' heads were at, you know, see if I could sense any patterns in the way that fans are thinking about this team. And, you know, in terms of takeaways, you know, it's not necessarily anything constructive or substantive, but it was fun. It did evidence something that I suspected was true, which was that, you know, we haven't watched this team play in 7 months. So I think people's, you know, it gets a little fuzzy when you remember all the things that this team, you know, couldn't do when they did take the floor, you know, the value that some players do have. And it's a little amusing. There were some that I was a little piqued by. Like there was one 3-team trade, I think, with the Sixers and Kings, that I thought was a really creative, good idea that I think netted the Bulls Ben Simmons, which I've, you know, Ben Simmons trade ideas I've generally rolled my eyes at, because if I'm high on him, and I just think if I'm Philly, you need the Godfather package to even think about parting with him. But there was one in there where the Bulls netted him that I actually thought was as close to as reasonable as it gets for him. But yeah, it was just an interesting, fun thing, like you said, to parse through and just see where everybody was at. One interesting thing that I thought was in a lot of these trades, Lauri Markkanen was a pretty consistent thread throughout them. He's one that it seems like a lot of the fan base is viewing as a little bit more expendable now than a year ago, which I thought was interesting. But that was about as substantive as a takeaway I could take away. It was more just, you know, for shits and gigs more than anything.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think the overwhelming thing that I sort of got from reading the article is that obviously, like I said, Bulls fans are certainly ambitious, and you noted that in your article.
That's,
I mean,
the
names that were sort of linked in those sort of trade proposals. I mean, there was a couple for Ben Simmons. There was a James Harden one, I believe, as well. So Bulls fans were aiming pretty high, let's say. But yeah, it is weird that I guess it depends on what circles you sort of run around and who you talk to, because some are still very high on Lauri Markkanen, maybe more so than I am. I'm probably on the lower end at this point. But yeah, there are obviously clearly some fans that are prepared to trade him at this point, which makes some sense too. But was there any that, I mean, you mentioned the one that maybe netted the Bulls with the Kings and obviously that three team deal. But was there anything else that sort of was thrown in there that you may think has some semblance of being somewhat realistic heading into this offseason for the Bulls, do you think?
I think it's tough. There was one, I know Chris Paul trades are popular. That's one that I would think on the spectrum of as about as unrealistic as it gets, only because, you know, the new front office has talked up cap space in 2021. And I think any team that's going to get in the Chris Paul sweepstakes has to feel like they're not planning for 2021 free agency at all, because I think he has a player option for $44 million next offseason. So as much as he would improve the team in the short term and the Billy Donovan connection, and there's a lot of things there that work, I would grade that as one of the more unrealistic ones that I saw consistently. Perhaps the most realistic one out of the entire piece was one that I hadn't thought of as a trade target, was the Rudy Gobert trade. I think it was Wendell Carter Jr., Otto Porter Jr., and number 4 for Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is actually in a pretty interesting situation because with Utah, I think he's in the last year of his contract. He'll be Supermax eligible at the end of it, and they'll have kind of a difficult decision to make, obviously, with all the interpersonal concerns with him and Donovan Mitchell. And is he someone that, you know, is going to get played off the floor at some point if you want to contend for an NBA championship? If you play 4 rounds in this era of basketball, like, are you going to run into a matchup that he's untenable in, and can you afford to invest so much resources in a guy like that, as great as he is at what he does do? So I thought that was an interesting kind of thought experiment from both sides. Now, me personally, I'm higher on Wendell than maybe anybody on the Bulls right now. He would be about as untouchable to me as anybody on the team, especially with Billy Donovan coming in. So it wasn't necessarily my taste, the trade, but I did think there was a hint of realism to it where you could see where the Bulls might think a piece like that could take them to another level, especially defensively, where, you know, without the kind of gimmicky schemes that Jim Boylan was running last year and possibly without Chris Dunn next year, they might, you know, set up to take a step back there. You could see the logic, but for me, it was, you know, for me personally, it wasn't necessarily my favorite of the bunch, but I did think it was probably the most realistic when you really think about it from both sides. I'm generally just a believer that in terms of the trade market, I just don't expect it to be a busy offseason from the Bulls. I think they're going to want to see, you know, the core young pieces of this team under a new coach in maybe a more conducive to success player development and just basketball environment. I think if I was running the team, I would probably want to see that same thing, even if there are guys that I'm higher or lower on, just having been around them and watching them. But yeah, I'm not expecting them to be necessarily active in the trade market. I guess anything could happen. But that was the one that I think is probably the closest thing to realistic out of the bunch.
Yeah, I noted the Rudy Gobert one down, me personally, because I noted it down because I just wouldn't be about it at all, because for the reason you sort of suggested, Wendell to me as well is probably... probably the most important player on this roster, maybe outside of Zach LaVine. And there's differences, obviously, between best, important, most potential, those sorts of things. But to me, for this specific Bulls roster, how it's constructed at the moment, Wendell is just so important. So when reading that one, I was like, oh, I understood where it was coming from, but I just couldn't get behind that one either. But I mean, thinking about the Bulls and maybe moving away from these sort of fictitious trades and just more thinking about it more holistically, I mean, should they be thinking about the 2021 offseason and playing that from a cap space point of view and maybe sort of negating or moving away from maybe making some trades for guys that have contracts beyond 2021, someone like Chris Paul? Or should they be thinking about maximizing the talent on this roster right now, which may be maximized or at least helped get there by someone like Chris Paul, who obviously maybe takes away or negates that 2021 plan, but may help you in terms of maximizing the roster next season, but maybe also maximizes Lauri Markkanen as a trade piece, Zach LaVine as a trade piece, those sorts of things. Where do you generally fall on that sort of topic or that issue?
That's a good point on Chris Paul or a player like him, not only helping in the win column immediately, but also lifting the potential value, whether it be internally or trade-wise, of a guy like Lowry, who needs, you know, I think at this point we know, even if last year, even if he's not going to be the player that he was last year for the rest of his career, it at least did reveal that he kind of is not necessarily going to be the creator that maybe it looked like he had the potential to be. He needs kind of the table set for him for the majority of his offense and things like that. So that's an interesting point. I think, as with anything, and especially you know, the types of decision makers that it seems like AK and Mark Eversley are, I think everything just pretty much depends on a value proposition. For me, I like the idea of this team having flexibility next summer. Now, it's not the be-all end-all because I don't think they're a marquee free agent destination at this point. I think there's a long way to go for that. So I'm not necessarily thinking pie in the sky of the top tier of guys. But there is a level where, you know, if you could start to turn this thing around and get some momentum, and you do have the flexibility that you can maybe make a play at that next level down, or maybe even, you know, a small step down from that tier two. So I don't know. I think it would depend. I think you would have to kind of weigh all the factors in front of you. To me, I love Chris Paul. He's an all-NBA guy at age 35 this year. I mean, that's just an amazing thing to say, given where his value was at this point last year. For me, I just am not sure that he's the one to take that chance on. And I'm not sure that there is that guy out there that the marriage of the Bulls being able to offer the right package and the team on the other end accepting that package. I've been listening to a lot of national outlets have been coming out with these kind of trade pontificating podcasts over the last few days, and I've been listening to them. And just some of the packages being proposed and some of the players floating out there, I just don't know if I really see it for the Bulls necessarily. That's not to say that this team untouched is going to, you know, flip things on its face and, you know, I think they can compete for the 8 seed next year, but I'm not even necessarily willing to say that this team as currently constructed, is for sure a favorite in that race by any means. But I'm just not sure who it is out there right now. I mean, Bradley Beal, I don't think the Wizards are going to trade him unless he kind of tries to force his way out of there. You look at a guy like Victor Oladipo, I mean, his value isn't necessarily as high as it was at this time, you know, a year and a half or 2 years ago. And you can go on the list with that. So my first instinct is I just don't see the fit with a lot of these high profile guys. And it's tough from the Bulls perspective because I don't know who on the Bulls is a plus asset right now outside of Zach LaVine. So I just don't know if you do trade a guy like Lowry or you do trade a guy, you know, down the roster for whatever you're getting back. I just am not sure that that's the best value that you're going to get for that player at this point. I think you want to give him a chance to recoup that. So, you know, I think at every turn you just have to look at it in a vacuum and it kind of depends on the situation. But I generally err probably more on the side of being conservative and maintaining that flexibility when maybe you're working from a position of more leverage. Because as much as we can be optimistic about the front office changes and, you know, the promise of better player development, we can be optimistic about better player development. The Bulls still, from a personnel standpoint, really don't have any leverage in talks with anybody in terms of trades. So I probably err a little bit more on the conservative side, but I could see arguments either way based on kind of individual circumstance.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. And look, you know, listeners of this show are probably already aware, but just for your purpose, I mean, I'm just a massive Chris Paul fan, so I admittedly am hugely biased in this. To me, the more I think about it, look, my initial, maybe a few months ago, 6 months ago, whatever it might be, I would have had would have shared a very similar point to the ones that you're making. But now, the more I think about it, the more I'm leaning on the Bulls should probably trade for Chris Paul or someone similarly like Paul, because I'm just have my concerns if this roster goes into this season or into the upcoming season, whenever that may be, largely untouched. I mean, if the roster is pretty stacked at this point, the roster charges in terms of who's on the roster will largely remain the same. There's not going to be holistic changes from that point of view. They may add one or two pieces from free agency, small pieces. Obviously, the draft, they'll do one or two things there. But by and large, the team itself will largely be what it is currently. And I have my concerns that, you know, if you go into year four of the rebuild with effectively the same core pieces and not much necessarily structurally changing around them apart from Billy Donovan, then I still have my larger concerns about this roster, this team itself. But if you just integrate a piece like Chris Paul, who can make someone like Zach LaVine's life a lot easier, you can get Zach maybe off ball a little bit more. I mean, you're starting a rebuild around Larry Markin and Wendell Carter Jr., two guys that are highly assisted players. I mean, having someone like Chris Paul, maybe the smartest player in the NBA, to set up those guys would make their life a lot easier. And like I said, maybe rehab the value of someone like Larry Markkinen, where his trade value right now is quite low, but maybe in 6 to 8 months' time, once after playing with Chris Paul for a while, maybe that perception changes as well. So I don't know. The more I think about it, I think the Bulls should maybe trade for Chris Paul. I don't even know if the 2021 offseason is going to be that good, to be honest with you. And it could change very quickly if Giannis signs some sort of extension, Anthony Davis, depending on what extension he signs. A lot of these younger sort of players that are in the 2021 draft, you would assume guys like Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, they're going to get max extensions from their team. So I'm not even sure the 2021 free agency period is going to be to even be that good, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, cap flexibility isn't necessarily always about outright signings. It just kind of it increases your flexibility for different trades and things like that down the line if they really do decide to dismantle this thing. But the, you know, at some point. But the interesting thing about Chris Paul that I was just thinking of as you were talking, and you make a compelling point. I mean, me personally, as someone who, you know, is talking to, you know, or, you know, assuming we can get back to the United Center and actually cover the team in a way that resembles the way we once did. You know, as someone like that, I would love to cover Chris Paul, and selfishly, you know, it would be a better product. And you were making some compelling points. And the interesting thing about a Chris Paul trade, hypothetically, is you probably don't have to give Oklahoma City much in the way of positive assets for him, because I think they're probably happy to just get off the money at this point. Yeah. I mean, think about it, a year ago at this time, they probably would have been hard pressed to, part with him without attaching draft picks themselves. Now, I think for them, a plus trade for them is just getting off of him and taking back either short-term salary or maybe a marginal piece. So, I mean, it gets tough to match salary, but if, you know, Otto Porter Jr., I think is, you know, he's obviously a massive expiring that pretty much most of the way facilitates that deal, and then you don't have to do too much on top of that. So it certainly is compelling. I would certainly consider it. I'm just not sure that that's where the regime's head is at. I could be wrong. And I think there are going to be teams that maybe will be looking, like, I don't think it's unreasonable that there will be actually a legitimate market of teams looking to give up real capital for Chris Paul. I mean, you look at the Knicks, they don't necessarily have many desirable pieces on their roster necessarily, but if they were to even throw in a guy like Frank Ntilikina in a Chris Paul deal, to me, that's already a step further that in terms of positive future assets than I might be willing to go from the Bulls' perspective. But I do like your point. I think we do lose sight of a little bit sometimes of actually the on-the-court stuff when the off-season haze kind of sets in. And it really is, you know, there's a lot of talk of potential and a lot of talk of promise. And we'll get into this if we talk about, you know, free agent targets and whether they should go, whether the Bulls should target kind of veteran plug-and-play guys or maybe younger guys with potential. You could go for a guy like Derrick Jones Jr., who would be a little bit of a project but has all this promise. But if you bring them into a basketball situation that isn't conducive to that growth, the flyer, it's kind of pointless to even take. And a guy like Chris Paul is a piece that makes those flyers more likely to work out in your favor. And to your point, is going to accelerate the growth of guys on the team. So I definitely see the argument. I guess it would just depend on the package. But I certainly would sign up for it. I wouldn't be upset at it if it was to happen.
Yeah, look, who knows what will happen? Look, the Bulls are situated nicely from a contractual standpoint to make it happen. It'll probably come down to that additional piece. You know, what sort of asset would they want to include in that, whether it's a draft pick or, you know, another team's maybe including two draft pick or maybe a second round pick and some young prospect like Ntilikina, like you mentioned before. So that'll probably be the determinant as to where Chris Paul goes. But like I said, I'm a bit of a biased Chris Paul fan, so I would like to see it happen for a number of reasons. But I think from an on-court perspective, I think it just makes sense. More so because Donovan's coming in, obviously, but I think most definitely because of the Bulls situation, obviously heading into year four of the rebuild. It's kind of a tenuous situation. I mean, we're assuming AK, Eversley, Donovan, they're going to continue to build on this thing. I'm assuming that's why Donovan's come here, that they're not necessarily going to tear it back down again. But if there's another bad season after 4 years, you know, rebuilding, and you're heading into another season where you don't make the playoffs, and then you all of a sudden you're heading into year five without a playoff appearance after a rebuild, at that point, do you tear it down again? I don't know. But it's just it's an interesting point in the Bulls rebuild, and this thing could go one of two ways. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I definitely want to talk about free agency. I want to talk about Derrick Jones Jr. Specifically because you wrote about him too. But before we do that, I want to tell the listeners about this week's sponsors. First up, let me tell you about Indeed. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring even more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make sure that your search is made that much easier. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the most important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31. Let me also tell you about BetOnline. Folks, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You may not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take full advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, back to the podcast now, and back with Rob Schaefer here from NBC Sports Chicago, talking about the upcoming Bulls offseason. We talked about some possible trade ideas for the Bulls heading into the offseason, but I also want to talk about free agency before concluding and talking about the NBA draft. But Rob, I wanted to talk about Derrick Jones Jr. specifically, because I know in the last few days there have been reports coming out of Miami about the Bulls being one of three or four teams that may be interested in Derrick Jones Jr. Again, that's something you covered off on NBC Sports Chicago. You wrote about the pros and cons of, you know, so adding someone like Derrick Jones Jr. to the Bulls. So maybe just give us that high-level overview of the report itself and just your general thoughts and feelings about maybe adding a player like Derrick Jones Jr. to the Bulls.
Sure, yeah. So in terms of the highest level of it, it's, yeah, the report. I think it was from Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, I want to say, without looking at it in front of me. But he reported that the Bulls, in addition to, I think it was the Pistons and the Atlanta Hawks, who are two teams that could have cap space this offseason, which I think factors into the financial consideration, if it ever came to that, are going to be interested in Derrick Jones Jr. You know, for people that haven't heard of him, I'm sure you've seen him. He won the 2020 dunk contest, which was in Chicago, which is probably his most, you know, his brightest moment. His most, you know, moment where he was on the most television screens. But I like him as a player. He's a promising young player. It feels like he's been around for a while for people that are really ingrained in the NBA world, at least to me. I was kind of surprised when I started digging on him that he's only 23. Yeah. He's a guy that I think he's 6'6", 6'7", with a 7-foot wingspan. You know, the dunk contest thing, if that tells you anything about him, he's a superb athlete, really high flyer. Great finisher around the basket. I mean, we know that was an area that the Bulls really, really struggled with last season, kind of in that attempt to modernize their offense. You know, they got to the rim a fair amount and were taking a lot of looks or taking a lot of field goals at the rim, but finished those looks at a rate that was among the worst in the league, despite leading the league in share of their field goals at the rim. So he'd help in that area. There's a pro. I think another pro is, you know, I mentioned that length that he has. He's a great kind of stocks guy, blocks and steals, really active defender. I think in terms of on ball, he could switch 1-4. That's something that this Bulls roster is really lacking in terms of just multi-positional, versatile kind of people that can toggle through, you know, multiple positions, especially on the defensive end. So I think he'd be useful to this roster in that aspect. I even said, I put in a line in there about how he does kind of feel like a guy that you would see pop off as like the 8th or 9th man for the Nuggets, and he'd impress you kind of in a random nationally televised regular season game or one of these bubble games. So to me, he kind of feels like an Arturis Karnišovas player, just kind of having all those, you know, physical tools, this raw talent, this multi-positional versatility. So I like that about him. I think he has just a lot of promise in those areas. Now, the downsides are pretty glaring and also coincide with areas that the Bulls kind of can't afford to get worse in. One being three-point shooting. He's a 28% three-point shooter. That was exactly what he shot from three-point range this year. No real signs of that improving. He's not really much of a creator outside of, you know, obviously looks at the rim. Shooting isn't great. And, you know, there's also an aspect of this where, and it kind of dovetails our Chris Paul conversation, where there's just a philosophical kind of conundrum, I think, that the new front office regime will find itself in, you know, especially when trying to decide how to use this marginal free agent exception that they have, this mid-level exception, which is, you know, do you want to invest in a 23-year-old guy who has all this promise, has all this potential, and I personally love as a player and think he'd be a great fit on the Bulls. But do you want to bring in a guy like that on a flyer when this roster isn't necessarily going to be the place where there is that, you know, surefire playmaker, that guy to kind of thread everything together and kind of, you know, spur along the development of a guy like that or put that guy in the right position to succeed? Or is he just going to end up kind of flying around, you know, making highlight plays every now and then, but not really moving forward as a player? I think Billy Donovan is the first step into that, you know, development process being a little bit more connected, but there obviously are personnel things that need to change there first. So those are all the kind of considerations that I was weighing with a guy like Derrick Jones Jr. versus, you know, some other more veteran guys, your Jay Crowders, your Kentavious Caldwell-Popes or DJ Augustines, or, you know, my colleague Casey Johnson did another piece for NBC Sports Chicago where he laid out some other realistic free agent targets, and he kind of went more the veteran instant contributor, kind of consistent, know what you're getting from every night guys. But I do think there is value in a guy like Derek Jones Jr. who has that upside and has those tools. I just think the versatility and the kind of malleability of his game is something that's missing from the Bulls. I think they can get a little bit rigid, especially at the forward spots where we know they pretty much just had no wings this year when Otto Porter Jr. and Chandler Hutchison went down. So I think he could be pretty useful in that department at least.
Yeah, look, I initially thought the same thing for all the points you just noted there. I think there is a fit for Derek Jones Jr. But I in thinking about it more, I was just wondering. I mean, his best position at this point is probably at power forward, and given that the Bulls have Lowry starting and then Thad coming off the bench, we're assuming, well, at the moment he is coming off the bench. Who knows if he'll be a Bull heading into next season? But assuming both were to stay, you have Wendell at center, you have obviously Daniel Gafford, you have Robert Horry / Luke Kennard on at center too. So, I mean, the positions that Derek Jones Jr. was sort of playing in Miami, which was not traditionally, but mostly power forward and even some center at times, the Bulls seem pretty stacked at this point. So the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, maybe, you know, someone like Derek Jones Jr. doesn't make a lot of sense for the Bulls, and maybe they need someone who's more specifically a shooting wing type, where that would be more relevant to this Bulls team, as you sort of alluded to, that the fact that they just had no wings once Chandler Hutchinson and Otto Porter went down. And at this point, there's no reason to believe that those guys will be healthy and playing a full season based on what we've seen over the last couple seasons at least. So I don't know. I could understand it, maybe signing Derek Jones Jr. if that was preceded with a deal of trading Thad out, maybe. And maybe, you know, trading Thad in a Chris Paul deal, maybe that makes sense. And then you can go and get Derek Jones Jr. But do you think, based on how the roster is currently constituted, that Derek Jones Jr. actually fits on the roster and would actually get meaningful playing time on this current Bulls situation?
Yeah, the including Thad and the Chris Paul deal and doing those things contingently, that's spicy. That's cooking with some grease there. But yeah, I think it would have to be, you know, when I was thinking about it, my thought, and it, I don't necessarily think it's a surefire thing or even a better than 50% chance thing that Thad Young will get traded this offseason, but it certainly, you know, at least makes sense that he might. To me, watching the way that his season kind of unfolded last year, I thought it was a bit of an unfortunate season for him because, you know, within a month and a half, he kind of was displeased with his role, obviously, leaked that to the press. And that kind of underlaid the rest of his season where, you know, if you track that season, the times that he was producing the most were the times when he was afforded more minutes. And oftentimes those came at the expense of Lowry because I know that Jim didn't think that they could play together. And really, you know, the evidence was there that just isn't necessarily a front court pairing that's going to hold up on either end of the floor, at least the way that those two played last year. And Thad's best stretch of the season actually came when he was starting in place of Lowry when he went out with that pelvic injury. So it certainly makes sense to me that if they were really seriously eyeing a guy like Derek Jones Jr., because I think you're right, his best position in the league is probably the four. I think it would make sense that would come contingent with moving on from Thad Young. You know, in reference to some of the free agency stuff we were hinting at earlier, you get a partial guarantee of his for $6 million, which isn't, you know, earth shattering, but you do get that off the books, and maybe they value that inch of flexibility more than what that could bring to the team at this point. So I think it is tough. It would create a little bit of a front court logjam. There's also a part of me that when I think about just this team's rotation in general, and maybe this all changes with the hiring of a new athletic trainer and just general front office and coaching staff overhaul. But the way that this team has operated the last few years, I almost assume that half the rotation is going to go down due to injury, like within a month of the season. So I just can't get out of my head those nights, you know, in February of 2020, like just before and after the All-Star break when Archie Diakono was starting games at small forward. And I love Arch, and Arch is great, but he would even tell you that he, you know, shouldn't be starting NBA games at small forward necessarily. So I just think he's versatile enough, Derek Jones Jr., that I wouldn't let the logjam necessarily deter me on its own. Now, if there was, obviously, you can afford to go for need a little bit more in free agency than in the draft. Obviously, you just want to take the biggest swing possible for the best talent available in the draft. I think that's something that pretty much anybody would agree on. So if there was a wing out there that was maybe a little bit better of a shooter, I think KCP would be the dream. Although I could totally see him kind of reverting back to his old self if he was to end up in Chicago and not the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope that we saw in the playoffs. That fit might be a little bit more snug. But I wouldn't let that logjam on its own stop me if I'm Arturas Karnišovas, and I really think that there's something special, something promising in a guy like Derek Jones Jr. Because I even think about it, you know, I mentioned that he's a good steals and blocks guy. I mean, he's just really a super athlete and protects the rim really, really well for kind of a tweener 3-4. And I just think of the line of configurations that could open up. I think that's a guy that you could play at the four next to Lowry at center, and I think that's an offensive lineup that has a lot of potential, and you don't lose as much defensively as if you're running him necessarily with a guy like that, or even a Chandler Hutchison, who I think is a great defender, but isn't necessarily the rim protector that a guy like Jones is. I just think there are a lot of little, you know, nerdy things that I kind of would just be curious to watch if he were to come aboard. I could see either side of it, but to answer the Thad point, I just am not sure that I'm letting Thad Young, as much as he is respected in the locker room and had his moments of productivity last season, I just wouldn't necessarily let him shape my strategy, because I think, you know, if all goes well, he's not necessarily a part of the long-term future anyway. So I see both ends of it. It's just it's at the top and in the middle of the free agent market this year. It's just not a very loaded class. It's just going to be hard to mine for guys that are going to be able to help you now and in the future. And I think Derek Jones Jr., he would be up there for me in terms of guys that could do that. I mean, my number one options, like I said, a guy like KCP or a guy like Jay Crowder, I think kind of intersects and gives you the best of both worlds there. But I wouldn't let the logjam stop me, especially because this team has been so injured. I mean, just who knows what could happen? Who knows who's actually going to be on the floor for this team on a daily basis until we see otherwise.
I mean, that is all true. And I certainly agree that you shouldn't let someone like that dictate your overall strategy as to what you want to do for the upcoming season, but maybe even beyond. But I think that's a key point in a sense. And you sort of alluded to this before as well, that, you know, Karnišovas isn't someone who I don't think we're going to learn a lot from in terms of how he values the pieces on the roster or just his general strategy going forward. I think he's just going to be very reserved and coy about that and maybe guarded about that. So I think we're probably going to learn more about how Karnišovas feels about the roster, his just general strategy of team building, etc., by his actions, less so his words. So to that point, I think, and as I said, you alluded to this before, I think what the Bulls do in free agency, or maybe it may be more importantly, what they don't do will ultimately dictate what their upcoming plans are. And I mean, we're talking about free agency. The Bulls really only mode in terms of, or really, their only way of adding any free agents in the upcoming free agency period is through the mid-level exception. I mean, that's going to be their primary tool that they have. Yeah. And we'll see how much that will ultimately be graded at, but it's generally going to be about $9 million. And when you go and sign a mid-level exception type player for $9 million annually, let's say, you typically do that over a 3 to 4 year period. Now, if you're doing something like that whilst also keeping an eye on 2021 free agency, does that sort of strategy negate itself in the sense that you're adding $9, $10 million of a player salary to the cap sheet and maybe taking away $9 or $10 million from your cap position in 2021? So I guess the broader question is, before we even get into the names of Derek Jones Jr., Jake Crowder, KCP, whoever it may be, is do the Bulls even look to use their mid-level exception, knowing that in the back of AK's mind, he may be thinking 2021?
Yeah, it's a good point. Again, I mean, it's always going to depend on the player. You know, if you could, I mean, I think the best case scenario is you get maybe someone who could contribute now and is willing to take that 1 year kind of flyer offer. Now, I think that's a tough proposition for players in the COVID-19 landscape where,
I mean,
we all assume that the league revenue wise, I mean, this next season, the 2021 season, seems like it's going to be a little stilted and messed up schedule wise because it'll be starting late. And who knows if they're going to try to jam the season in even slightly condensed fashion to try to get the playoffs ending at, you know, roughly the same time. You know, we just don't know what's going to happen there. So it might be tough to get players to sacrifice that long-term security this offseason. I think it depends. I think if it's a signing like, if it's an upside signing, like a Derek Jones Jr. signing, I think I might be willing to go to that 2 or 3 year mark, because as long as you're in the $7 to $9 million range, which is towards the north end of that mid-level exception, given the kind of flexibility that the Bulls have with some of the guys that are going to have partial guarantees in 2021, but won't necessarily they don't necessarily need to make their full allotment. So I just think of like Tomas Satoransky. He's a guy that makes $10 million a year, but his salary for 2021 is only partially guaranteed for $5 million. Thad obviously makes 13, 14, but is partially guaranteed for six that offseason. So if the Bulls were in a situation in 2021 where they really were pinching pennies and trying to cobble together enough flexibility to get, you know, one marquee guy, if they somehow were able to talk someone into coming aboard, if they did have a contingency plan like that, I think there are avenues to make up that that committed money there. It also depends on, you know, as you mentioned, with valuing the pieces on the roster. We don't really know how this new regime values Lauri Markkanen yet, with his extension talks looming. If he's someone that, you know, gets traded, or even if he's someone who is let walk, or if he has kind of a so-so season and we're not sure what his value is and he ends up playing on a qualifying offer or doesn't end up getting the kind of money that we maybe were expecting him to get last offseason. I just think there are a lot of ways that they can maintain that flexibility, even if they do have that $7 to $9 million committed. That's not damaging salary. That's not completely hamstringing you. If you are getting a guy that contributes in a way that, you know, is either win now or looking to the future. So I guess, you know, it's a valid point, though. I guess if I was targeting more of a win now guy, I'd probably be trying to get them on a 1-year deal. If you don't see him as a part of, you know, you just got to look at the team as, you know, hypothetically, if the Bulls were to be good in 2 years, and then you look at a player that's either already on the roster or a potential signee, you look at them and you'd pretty much just have to ask yourself, if we were to be good next year, do we see this person as being a part of it? And if you don't, then you try to keep it to as short a commitment as possible. And if maybe you do, then maybe you're willing to dip into the long-term stores a little bit more. But yeah, you know, everything's about value. I think it's, you know, good and a point of optimism that there are people that understand that making the decisions now, and you know, people a little bit further into the future of thinking about basketball. So the hope is those calculations are actually, you know, being weighed seriously and that the correct decision comes out of it. But it is an interesting proposition. I don't think that $7 to $9 million is necessarily going to make or break them one way or the other. There are ways to finagle their way around it, but it certainly is something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, they're all fair and reasonable points too. And obviously, there's just so many variables in this situation, specifically for Chicago, that this whole thing could just break a million different ways, really. So yeah, all fair points. But maybe even before we start thinking about free agency, Derek Jones Jr., whoever it may be, we have to come back to the draft, because maybe the draft itself will ultimately determine what the Bulls do or don't do in free agency, who the type of player they may or may not target in free agency. So maybe we can transition and maybe close on some draft talk. And I know note on the Bulls Talk podcast, I think in the last week or so, Tom Haberstroh was on the podcast with KC, and he was sort of talking about his expectations about the Bulls maybe sort of even trading up in the draft. And if you do that, what does that permutation mean on the rest of the roster going forward, particularly into free agency? So let's talk about the draft, because I think that's, again, like I mentioned before, we'll probably learn more about what Karnišovas is thinking about this specific roster and maybe his just general strategy as he makes these moves. And the first real move that he's going to have in terms of shaping the roster is at the draft, which is essentially 3 weeks away, 3-4 weeks away at this point. So we're getting closer to the draft happening. But coming back to the Bulls Talk podcast, Haberstroh is sort of suggesting and speculating that maybe the Karnišovas and the Bulls may look to move up in the draft. I don't know how I feel about that situation, but I thought I'd throw it to you and get your thoughts on, you know, what you expect the Bulls to do in the draft. Do you think they're coming to trade up, trade down? What are your general thoughts about the draft?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that that Haberstroh said that and like you said, speculated. Everything that, you know, guys like him or Casey says is informed speculation, even if it is speculation. So I thought it was really interesting that he brought that point up. I think just listening to the way that he spoke about it and just kind of surveying the situation, it seems like it was as much a product as, or as much a product of Minnesota and Golden State being anxious to maybe see what they could get for their selections as anything. So if you're Karnišovas and you're sitting there and you get a deal that you kind of can't pass up, there's no reason, you know, from a value perspective, Maybe you think about it. If it's me, I don't like, and I don't like the idea of going into the draft necessarily with one set strategy. Steph Noe, who formerly of The Athletic, one of the best Bulls minds out there, wrote a great piece on his Substack, kind of about the idea of being fluid going into the draft and being able to just kind of follow your instincts where the best value is. If you like someone and you get the right deal, move up. If you maybe are a little bit more content to sit back and you get the right deal to move down, move down, but not committing to one, avenue on it. I think I align with that thinking, and I think I would trust Karnišovas to, think that through for himself and make the right decision a little bit instinctively and a little bit on the fly. My own personal opinion just on this draft is I just think the Bulls are in a decent spot in terms of being at number four. There just isn't that kind of sell the farm to get this player guy necessarily. There's a handful. There's probably three or four guys that if the Bulls took it four, or if they traded back and they were able to get, that I think would, fit well on the team and also have the kind of upside that would merit a best talent available proposition. So I don't necessarily think they're in a bad spot or in a position where they should be desperate enough to part with assets to trade up. Because, I think in a weak draft, maybe you could argue that it'll take less to trade up now than in recent years. And obviously the Bulls are starting from a position where they're number four. So attaching that pick to something lessens the amount that you're going to have to give up in addition to that. But there's also a level to it where if there's a lot of competition, if there are a lot of teams jockeying to try to take advantage of it being a weaker draft and being easier to move up, if you have a lot of competition in the market, maybe the price starts getting driven up past a point that they're comfortable with. For me, I just think they're in a good spot. If it was me, I wouldn't be stressed too much about going in either direction. I'd be pretty happy with where I'm at four. And if anything, I'd probably be listening more to trading down because I just think, between numbers 4 and 10 of this draft, I think you're still going to be able to find someone that can help you. And if you could pick up another asset or two for the long term, all the better. I mean, this team can't have enough assets moving forward, especially for a new regime that has a pretty good draft reputation. The more bites at the apple that they get, the higher likelihood is that they're going to hit on something. So I don't necessarily have a strong opinion one way or the other. I mean, I think I am high on a guy, say LaMelo Ball. I'm pretty significantly higher on his upside than anyone else in the class. But does that mean that if I'm the Bulls, I'm chomping at the bit to part with a member of the core to move up two spots to get him? Not necessarily. I just think there's a heavy kind of pro-con calculation that you got to make with all of these prospects in a year where there's upside for everybody, but there also seems to be a fair amount of red flags for everybody. So I would just kind of take it as it comes. All things considered, I don't think the Bulls are in a bad spot at four. I think pretty much no matter how the top three shakes out, and it does seem like there's a pretty good shot it just shakes out as in some order, LaMelo, Wiseman, and Anthony Edwards. I think if that's how the top three goes, or even if a Killian or a Denny sneaks into the top three, I think the Bulls are going to be in a pretty good position where there's a handful of guys that they could take that I at least would be happy with. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that too, because I know everybody kind of falls differently draft season. Everything's very subjective and it's guessworky and it's, kind of an interesting time. So I'd be curious where you fall on the trading up, back, staying put kind of calculation.
Yeah, look, I think everything you noted there is correct. I definitely agree with the more, you should always enter the draft with an inflexible approach because you don't know how these things will sort of shake out on the night. So you have to be open to a number of different things. But assuming the most realistic things happen, then to me, trading up in this draft probably doesn't make sense, assuming the Bulls can even do that at all, because a lot of the conversation about the Warriors or Wolves maybe trading out of the first and second pick is that they're looking to maybe trade that pick, assuming that they can get a player that helps them win now, which for the Bulls, I don't see a lot of win now sort of guys that you would necessarily attach to the number four pick or something like that to move up to grab the first or second pick. So I don't necessarily see the Bulls being a really good trade partner for the Wolves or Warriors, assuming they want a win now type player. That I just don't see that connection more generally. So to what you noted before, I'm probably more inclined to trade down in this specific draft because I think there's not that much variability between sort of players 3 through maybe 7 or 8, something like that. I think it's fairly similarly tiered type players. So I definitely agree with your logic there. But yeah, it'll just be interesting to see how it all shakes out. And Again, coming back to what I said before, we'll learn more about Karnashovans based on his actions. And I do think for any first-time lead exec to make a bold move to go up and trade for someone like LaMelo Ball, let's say, who will probably come into the NBA and straight away have two elite skills from a ball handling and passing perspective. But beyond that, there are a lot of question marks. So to
immediately,
yeah, exactly. So to stake some of your initial first impressions, let's say, on someone like LaMelo, who if it breaks right, you look like a genius. But I think there's a fair chance that it doesn't. I think it would be a bold play. I don't know what Karnashovas's risk profile is. So again, it's hard to comment on that. But personally, I probably am not trading up in this draft. I'm sitting put at number four or even trading down. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, I suppose, in this specific draft. And I guess what makes me, again, somewhat nervous based on the chatter that I've seen this week, and for whatever reason, Obi Toppin has been the flavor of the week amongst Twitter, amongst writers, amongst just the general discourse around the draft. Given that I'm putting this down to people being bored and they just don't want to talk about Anthony Edwards or James Wiseman or anyone like that, and maybe just thinking about other names that may be connected in this draft as to who's maybe we should be applicable in this specific draft, you know, in the top 4 to 5 range. And to my reservations, let's say, Obi Toppin's name has been sort of talked about a lot this week, and maybe looping it back to where we started this conversation and bringing my old friend Fred back into the conversation, who is maybe the biggest Obi Toppin fan out there. This whole conversation about Toppin going in that sort of top 4, top 5, top 6 range is concerning to me. Even if the Bulls don't necessarily take Toppin, maybe it just changes the draft night and how things play out. But I don't know, I just thought we could close on just getting your general feeling about Obi Toppin and just the discourse around Toppin over the last week, which has sort of picked up momentum over the last week. Again, you never know what any of this sort of chatter that comes out at this time of year, if it means anything or if it's just scuttlebutt, but there's been connections of Toppin going to the Wolves or the Warriors or even, you know, somewhere inside that top 4 or 5 range. But what are your general thoughts about Obi Toppin more holistically, but maybe more specifically on the Chicago Bulls?
Please no. that's my opinion on Obi Toppin for the Bulls specifically. And I love Obi Toppin. I mean, there wasn't a more fun player to watch in college basketball last year. You know, if you sweep every player of the year award in the NCAA, like, that means something. There's a lot to like about him. I couldn't be more out on him from the Bulls' perspective. Ricky O'Donnell tweeted this out the other day. I had this in a mock draft, just a nugget in it from a couple months ago. He's one day younger than Jason Tatum on draft
night. Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable. And you combine that with, you know, for someone who is such a lauded athlete, I think he's kind of a stiff defensively from what I've seen of him. I don't really see that changing necessarily. You know, obviously he's a tremendous athlete. A lot of the finishing concerns that I have with the Bulls, and that I think they need to address this offseason, he would obviously help with. Talk about a front court logjam. I mean, a front court of him and Lauri Markkanen defensively is something that I never want to watch in my life. There's just a lot of things about the Obi Toppin fit that I am not a fan of. Where I'm at with number four, there are really four guys to me. And, you know, I'm always watching more of everybody every day and reading people that are smarter than me and listening to people that are smarter than me. And opinions kind of evolve on prospects, especially in such an uncertain process. I think we're getting combine measurements soon. But really all we've gotten directly is we got, you know, Zoom press conferences with a couple guys. And you don't necessarily, you know, get everything that you need from that. And then workout footage will leak out and things like that. But really, if I'm the Bulls, for me at four, if it's Denny, if it's Killian, if it's Okoro, or if Ball were to somehow slip, those are the four to me that I would be perfectly happy with. I totally see it. Anybody else, I would raise my eyebrow a little bit, and probably, you know, higher, up or down, depending on who it is. I think Obi would be the most horrific outcome for me because I just don't see it. I'm not a fan. Fred and I have DM'd about this. I'm not into the idea. It doesn't need to turn into a full Obi Toppin breakdown, but I just don't see the upside for a team like Chicago with a pick like that. Now, I think he should, you know, definitely still be a lottery pick, and I think he could definitely help a team. You know, I continue to think that he's a pretty good fit with the Knicks just based on how they want to kind of flip this thing into a win now, or it seems like they do. pretty quickly. He's rep by CAA. There's a lot of little things there. I'm not sure how Tibbs would feel about him, especially on the defensive end. But, you know, if it were to happen, I guess we would see. But yeah, that's kind of my general thought there on the OB situation.
Fair enough. I feel very similarly. And yeah, look, Topper makes sense in New York, particularly next to Mitchell Robinson. I think that would be an interesting front court combination. And look, I'll admit that a Top and Wendell Carter combination in the front court would work, but what does that mean for Lauri Markkanen? So again, coming back to what I said before, we'll learn more about Karnašovas through his actions, less so his words. If their balls were to take Toppin at four and just feel that he's the best player available, then what does that signal from a Lauri Markkanen point of view? So yeah, it's going to be interesting. That would be probably the only intrigue for me about maybe the Bulls drafting Obi Toppin. Like, that would be the only intriguing thing of it. The rest of it, I completely agree with you. I think it would be an absolute disaster. But yeah, I was a little concerned, I suppose, this week how much steam and momentum was being picked up on the Obi Toppin bandwagon. But like I said, this time of the year, we shouldn't be putting too much into any sort of stock into rumors or speculative conversations that just appear out of nowhere, I suppose, yeah. Given that we've just had so long to mull over the draft, specifically for the Bulls. I mean, we've been talking about the draft since March, so I'm pretty over it at this point. I'm happy for the draft to roll around, but we shall see what they do come November 18. But Rob, look, I've kept you long enough, mate. I really do appreciate you making your Bulls HQ debut. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Obviously, keep doing what you're doing on NBC Sports Chicago. I think you've been a welcome addition to the Bulls beat. But before you get away, mate, in the odd chance that people aren't following you online or don't necessarily know where to grab your work, just fill them in on how they can follow your stuff.
Yeah, at Rob Shafe or at Rob _Shafe on Twitter. I can't even remember my Twitter handle. That's where I'm at on Twitter, NBCSportsChicago.com. My work, my colleague Casey Johnson, you know, we're churning as much as we possibly can and having as much fun as we can as we approach the draft. So that's a place to find the written stuff. And then the Bulls Talk podcast, we've got new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. You know, a lot of good guests in the past and coming up in the future. And when we don't have guests, it's kind of just me, Jason Goff, Casey, and Tony Gill shooting the shit, which is always a lot of fun too. So that's where you can find me. If Obi Toppin happens to be listening to this, if he gets drafted by the Bulls in a month, and he goes back and finds this recording, I'm probably in a little bit of trouble. But I will put my full take there on paper at some point too. So, I will plant my flag there. And, yeah, it was nice. I hope I get a message from Fred if he does listen to this, because we spent, I think it says 54 minutes there. I think we must've spent at least 6 to 7 minutes talking about him. So.
Yeah, look, I can't guarantee you that Fred is listening to this, and I probably can guarantee you that Obi Toppin most certainly isn't listening to this, so I'm assuming you're okay there, Rob, but yeah, look, nonetheless, it's been a fun conversation, so yeah, thanks again for jumping on.
Good stuff, man. Good to talk to you.
So thanks again to Rob for jumping on Bulls HQ. Hopefully you enjoyed this one, Bulls fans. We'll be back probably again next week talking more about the draft. We'll be ramping up the draft coverage as we sort of head into the last couple of weeks of the draft period, I suppose, as we head into November 18th. So thanks again for Rob coming on this episode. Bulls fans, whilst you're following Rob online, if you're not by any chance following me on as well, you can jump on Twitter at MKHoops. Follow the podcast too on Twitter as well, at BullsHQPod. If you want to send me an email, you can do so at BullsHQ@gmail.com. If you want to be part of the Bulls HQ Discord forum, just send me an email. I will drop you a link to be part of the Discord forum. Get up in there, chat with over 100 Bulls fans about all things Bulls. But that just about does it for this episode of the podcast. Again, thanks to Rob. Thank you to the listeners of this show. And like I said, we'll be back again next week. But until then, this has been Bulls HQ. Speak then, Bulls fans.